Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to HJT Design Radio Straight Talk, a show dedicated to exploring all aspects of creating a great dental office, where the only dumb question is the question that's not asked. Here's Jim and Han.
Good evening, Jim Jervis here, along with my co-host Han Tran. Han, how are you?
I am marvelous, Jim. Just absolutely marvelous. How about you?
Not too bad. Today is actually a beautiful day up in northwestern Ohio, and nice low humidity and decent temperature. Sun's out. We cannot complain at all, at least not about that aspect. I think Florida's getting some unbelievably hot weather from what I gather, isn't it?
A normal temperature, Jim. It's only like 92, 94 degrees in the sun. You know, you step out, you get a nice warm feeling for about 5 minutes, and you want to go inside. And but you know,
yep. Get right back in that air conditioning.
That is right. Thank God for air conditioning. Yep. So
yeah,
it's sunny.
Well, obviously,
it's sunny.
Yeah, there we go. Well, obviously, welcome to Straight Talk. Today, episode number 80. We kind of hit a milestone, 80. I was talking to a doctor the other day, and he goes, what are you guys going to do for your 100 show? And I said, well, we better start thinking about that. Well, you know, what's 100 shows? I can't believe we've had that many things to talk about for 80 shows. So what are we going to do for 100? We'll have to think about that one. But tonight's show is we've got a couple things we want to talk about. One's a new material. A new material that has come to light. Our research is telling us that this might be something to help fight the COVID-19 virus. And then, of course, some questions. But the interesting thing is this new material, new technology, it's not really new. It's been around for ages and ages and ages, been used in a lot of pharmaceutical production, but it's, lack of a better term, it is what is known as a silver ion. So what it is that silver ions are impregnated into this material. It's usually in the form of a wrap or a film, and you place it on high traffic areas where you touch things. Han, you remember when we did the show about antimicrobial materials way back when, probably, you know, 20, 30 shows ago, and we were talking about how copper was
yes.
A antimicrobial. And there's some kind of ion thing going on. This is past me, but it effectively destroys or doesn't let the germ or the virus replicate as quickly. Well, silver ions do the exact same thing, but on a much higher scale. And so effectively you're creating a antibacterial surface film that when you touch it, it doesn't foster the ability for that virus to stay there. So if you touch it and you have the virus, effectively it will help destroy the virus before the next person touches it. So, you know, as we're thinking about this and we're looking at this, and the applications make a lot of sense. Now, there's two or three manufacturers out there. We can let you have that information. One of them is Silver Defender. We're not advocating any or all of these. We're just giving this information out. for you to do your own research around and see if it works for you. But the Silver Defender, and you can just type in Silver Ion barrier wraps in, you know, any search bar to Google or whatever, and be able to find their other manufacturers for this product. Some here in the States, some in the UK. There's other products that actually create, they have some material that you put around door handles and that kind of stuff. But the Silver Defender is made here in the U.S. and I believe it's distributed out of a place in New Jersey, made in Texas. But the really cool thing about it, Han, was that it actually came in a stretchy film. So you can apply it kind of like tape and place it on everything. I mean, what are the possibilities? Where would you place it on?
You know, Jim, it would remind me of, and I think a lot of our listeners probably can relate to, is that when you buy a brand new piece of appliance and they have that light blue film, protective film, you know, to keep, you know, protect the surface of the doors from, you know, getting scratched and stuff like that. That's the first thing that I think of. Okay. Before we went on the show and Jim and I kind of run through some of the things that where this stuff can be applied, that we touch everything. Okay. I mean, we touch a lot of stuff. Before you come into the building, you grab onto the door handle to pull onto it, or you push onto it. If it's push, you more likely will touch the door, not the handle. But we touch everything. The one thing that would be interesting, and we haven't really run into the research on it, is that whether the sunlight would have any negative effect on the film. So if, you know, like in the area of the country, such as Ohio or a place where you have snow, the freeze and thaw, whether the film on a exterior door surface would be affected by the, you know, by the extreme weather, that would be something that I can call the manufacturer and find out. But that'll be interesting to know, because if you can put it on the door, that's the first surface you touch, and then everything else. Once you're in the building, you touch all kind of surfaces if you start to pay attention. Yeah, grab onto the chair, touch the check-in counter, check-out counter, bathroom doors. Everywhere we go, we touch everything. So I think it's the application is almost endless. Okay, it's fascinating. I think so. It's not a cure-all product, but it minimizes the amount of bacteria and germs and microbes that you transfer from place to place. Jim?
Yeah, without a doubt. And from what I understand is the film is obviously designed to be placed on everything, like door handles and that kind of stuff. So if it's on a door handle, it's on the outside of the building, I think it's designed to be able to survive that environment. Now, it may in fact not last as long out there. That's the one downside about these products. The film has to be replaced every, I think the one manufacturer we've researched here says every 90 days. So every 90 days you have to go around and replace the film with a new fresh film. But just like what? You have to replace the filters on your furnace. You have to replace the plastic wraps on your, you know, the stuff that you're protecting within your operatory. So it's just another thing that you have to do. But if it's working for you, like it says, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and it kind of makes sense to at least look into. The other thing that we've also understand is that the film is not degraded by cleaning. So if you were to clean it with alcohol, clean it with Clorox, you know, clean it with pretty harsh cleaners, you don't destroy the silver ion and its ability to kill viruses, bacteria, and you know, microbes. So that's a good thing. So you're not affecting your cleaning protocol whatsoever. You don't have to change it up at all. It's just they're doing an extra level of protection. So, you know, think about, I guess, if it works, look at the area, look at your areas within your office, what's touched the most. And, you know, maybe it's a product that should be looked into and placed. It comes for everything from a stretchy film to pre-cut peel and stick kind of stuff. And I guess this particular product, as we did the research on it, you can remove the film and it doesn't leave a sticky residue. That's the other cool thing about it. So, you know, we've all done it, right? You put tape on something, right? How many times we put tape on something and you go to take the tape off and you get this sticky gob of gooey leftover that's on the surface that you place the tape on. And you if you don't put something back over again, it just attracts all kinds of grudge.
You know, like this beautiful, the book that you buy at the store with a beautiful binder and all that stuff, and they put the price tag right on the front, and you can't get that gooey stuff off. Yeah, that's annoying. But it probably a static clean type. That's definitely a plus. No residue, right?
Mm-hmm. No, it actually has an adhesive that's part of it, but it's not a scenario where it leaves leaves an adhesive leftover when you take it up. So, you know, they were thinking about the right things when they put it together from that regard. And so, again, that particular product, it's a silver ion impregnated. It's called Silver Defender. There's a whole bunch of others out there. But give it a look. And the other thing, Han, you and I were talking about and had to do with some of the newer recommendations on restrooms and specifically the hand dryers.
Yeah. Hey, Jim.
You want to talk a little bit about that?
Before we go into the hand dryer, there's another manufacturer.
Yeah.
Let's go ahead and give it to them. It's called Safe Handles. That is SafeHandles. Safe Handles. SAM Technology. Basically wrap the doors and stuff like that. Okay. So anyway.
Right. That's another one. I think that one's based in the UK. I'm not mistaken. I think it's based in the UK, but it is one of the, and there's others out there as well. That one's a little different. It actually has a material that you clamp around your door handles and that kind of stuff. It's not a film. It's actually like a wrap that's got some thickness to it that clamp around door handles and those kind of things. So check them out. Yeah, without a doubt.
Yeah, it is a EPA approved pesticide base. Okay, so the other one is silver impregnated. But it is product with the same, with the same type of functionality, is to reduce the spread of the germs and microbes and what have you. Okay. So anyway, the topic of the hand dryer, and it makes a lot of sense. Is that the high volume, high speed, hand dryer that blow the meat off against your bones type of a hand dryer. I think it was last year, summer or late fall, there was discussions and articles about that type of hand dryer, electric hand dryer. The articles about it, the air current that come out of there is so high, so fast, that it will blow whatever on your hand, whether it's water droplets, fecal matter is spread onto you and on the surrounding surfaces. So there was a discussion about how gross it is. If there is recommendation for it to be replaced and go back to other form of, other material or other ways that you dry your hand, like back to the paper product, that makes a lot of sense, really. People don't wash their hand as well as they should. If they wash it at all when they go to the bathroom, which is kind of gross, but if they don't wash it well and they still have, stuff on their hand and you stick it out of the machine and it'll just blow all over you and you become that transport vessel that carried to other places where you migrate to. So definitely, I think, I've never been a big fan of those things anyway, mainly because it makes so much noise. You know, when you put it into a restroom, you don't have a standalone restroom, okay? It's always adjacent to something. Most dentist office, for convenience, you have one located in the front of the office, hopefully not right off of the waiting area, but it's more in right behind the take back door. So it's in that area and it's adjacent to rooms, whether it's the manager's office or the consultation room or something that you may occupy and have some quiet conversation. And so the placement of the hand dryer has to be looked at carefully so it doesn't, it doesn't vibrate the wall or create too much noise that it become an issue for the adjacent space. So yeah, I can understand the recommendation to replace it with something that's a lot quieter or don't blow the stuff off your hand. So it looks like paper towel is becoming invoked again. Jim?
Yeah, and they're talking about the touchless paper towel dispenser as being the norm now. They could be motion activated, that kind of stuff, so to reduce touching of anything and effectively, like you said, not blowing the bacteria or the particulates around all over the place with these high velocity air currents that don't do anything in the way of capturing the microbes, but actually would disperse them very quickly throughout the whole room. Now, so again, something to look at, an area that might be germane to your particular application or your particular office. Now, the last product or material that came to light that we might see an application in the dental office is called polymeric fluorine. Now, that's just a fancy word for, on what you call it, a giant piece of fly paper.
Yes.
Yeah, but the cool thing about this particular manufacturer, this product, is Dycem, D-Y-C-E-M, and then it's D-Y-C-E-M-USA.com. Again, we're not recommending anything other than, something for you to look at or check into, but in our research and our experts are telling us these folks are taking this polymeric fluorine and impregnating it with the silver ions so that when you walk across this floor pad, and it's designed as if it's only a floor pad, when you walk across it, it effectively will pick up all the particulates on your shoes. And It's been used a lot in hospital clean room areas, in pharmaceutical manufacturing facilities, in any place where you want to have a super high level of control between one area to another area. When you walk across this mat, you're going to pick up, I think it's up to 99.9% of the particulates off of the shoe and or cart wheels. So if you're running carts, and you could obviously think about this in the way of a hospital setting or pharmaceutical manufacturing floor or whatever, when you run something with wheels across, it's going to just continually distribute whatever you run through. So if you run it across this product, it has a sticky kind of feel to it. We'll grab all the particles, the particulates, everything off of those wheels or shoes and keep it there. Now with the silver ion impregnation, then, you know, it will kill the bacteria, the microbes. And then when you clean it, you clean away the dirt, the grudge, the particulates, the particles, and everything else that's there. There's many different manufacturers of them, and this particular one has a 90-day, every 90 days you have to change it out too. So it's just like anything else, it has to be changed out. Now, from an aesthetic standpoint, it's not the prettiest thing at all. It's just a big sticky mat that you walk across. So I guess, Han, we probably wouldn't recommend putting that at the front door, would we?
Probably not. I mean, when Jim pointed out, I had my first experience with a product similar to that when I was in a facility that manufactured components for computers. And mainly it was to attract any debris that you have on the bottom of your shoe before you go into a cleaner environment. Because it depends on what the facility main objective is that if you're looking to reduce the spread of virus and bacteria and so on, this product that's impregnated with the silver ion will do that job, then that's what it's intended for. But they make it, for various purposes. And it reminds me of, a big fly paper, and that's what it feels like. And when you walk across it, you feel this, you get that shoosh underneath your shoes. And it's not the prettiest thing to look at, but it was not designed to enhance the aesthetic. It was designed to perform a very specific needed function, is to remove gunk off the bottom of your shoes. So, yeah, it's ugly. It's an ugly thing, but, it's a trade-off. What do you need to do? You want to get the stuff off your shoe? It doesn't need to look pretty. Okay? Jim?
So we look at probably placing that in some strategic locations. Maybe in a corridor.
Yeah. Maybe in the lab, but like we talk about that in your treatment room, your operatory, when you do restorative work and you turn on the hand pieces and they start to generate the aerosol, things eventually will end up on the floor. Whatever is left that is not picked up by, your filtration system and your building, return duct and stuff like that. Eventually, everything, whatever is left, will fall on the floor, and it's on the floor, you're going to track it to someplace else. So it would help. But you have to look at, make sure that it's the right thing for you. So, yeah, treatment room sounds like the ideal place, because that's where all of the major concern about aerosol. So, Jim?
Yeah, maybe at least, right outside the treatment room door or something like that. So when you walk it out, just some ideas. some ideas.
Yep.
All right. Those are the newer products that we wanted to talk about, to at least get that information out to you. And we've had, I want to say a slew of questions that have been thrown at us. And Han, you had one that was quite interesting, and I think it actually was something that came about from a discussion on downtown, wasn't it?
Yes.
Having to do with the existing building. So let's talk about that one.
Yeah. Usually when there is a topic that's put up for discussion, we try to gather as much fact as possible, because often the lack of details and information is presented, and you get a lot of really off-the-wall recommendation and stuff. In this particular case, this is because both Jim and I have pretty extensive experience dealing with all sorts of buildings. So you through the years and decades of being in the field, you pick up certain information, and that allows you to ascertain what you're dealing with. Okay. The question was posed was, this particular doctor had hired a carpet guy. He didn't say a contractor, a flooring guy, to install some new flooring in his office over the shutdown. And it was a luxury vinyl planks. And he said that after a few days, the flooring material around the chair started to come apart. And he said, I asked if anybody could help and, make some recommendation of what it could, what it could be and how to solve it. Through the discussion was that he had checked with his plumber. The plumber checked, and there was no active water leak. Not going to play attorney or anything like that, but when you say no active water leak, it could mean that there was water leaks at one time, because you don't call in a plumber to check on leaks if you don't have any leaks, okay? So if there is a previous leak, it could be a potential problem. In this case, there's no active water leak. The installer, based on the information that we received, was that the installer said it could be moisture problems, moisture in the floor, and he recommend that the doctor have it, have the moisture content checked out for information purpose. A contractor installing the flooring or new flooring product on your floor should check the moisture content of the substrate before he apply any flooring on your floor. Mainly, things that are told, that usually are ignored are recommendations from the manufacturer. Yes, it sounds reasonable if you buy, the latest, greatest luxury vinyl tile or planks and put it down on an existing floor that, of a building that's been around for eons. That's a pretty safe thing, but we normally don't make any assumptions. Okay, so for all intended purpose, the contractor should have checked the moisture content. In this case, he did not. What had happened after asking for information and looking at what was provided to us, he said there was some patching done. Another problem was that when you walk across the floor, you can hear crackling sounds, and which is not very normal, okay? That just means there's something going on that's creating that noise, and that's usually not good. The picture that I asked for was the before and after. So there was picture that provided of the substrate before the vinyl, the luxury vinyl I can install. This was a older building. I would say it's probably a downtown, an old downtown district building where the construction was probably take it back to the turn of the century or, somewhere around there. So the building may be around 80, 90 years old. The substrate were actually pieces of wood put together. They're not one continuous plank like what you see when you peel off your hardwood floor or something like that in an old house. So they're little pieces. A very common practice back in 50, 60 years back or so, there was a product called a gypsum underlayment, meaning that just imagine taking your drywall and pulverize it into powder, add water to it, and it become a liquid, and you pour it over a floor, and that floor, and the whole purpose is that, the material will flow to the lowest point, and it become level. So that's why it's called self-leveling floor. But it's made out of gypsum, which means it could, if you put excessive weight on it, you'll break it. Okay, similar to your drywall product. And so it become a very common issue. There's a lot of problem with those type of flooring substrate. In this particular case, that was one of the main issue. There was area that was damaged, and so the contractor patched it. But to put down a flooring such as your luxury vinyl planks, it depends on the thickness. Okay, the thicker it is, the better it is, so that it can bridge any kind of imperfection in your floor. But if you use a thinner material, that floor, even though it's self-leveling, but in this case it was patched, that means if the job is not done very well, then the floor might as well be a rough floor that had never been fixed. So even if the patching material are up to today's standard, which is a lot better, more durable and all that stuff, but the surrounding surface or substrate of that flooring system is still very inferior. So when you put the new vinyl flooring over the top of it and you apply the weight of the chair back on it and you walk across it, it will continue to deteriorate. So as you apply weight onto the flooring, the sound, the cracking sounds that are heard is the existing self-leveling gypsum flooring material breaking apart. So the application, what I could have, should have done, is that the entire floor gypsum product be removed all the way down to the wood deck, and then a new plywood decking be put over the top of that, so it gives you a much cleaner, smoother, stronger substrate for the new vinyl tile to go down onto. Okay, so it's a wrong application. It's a wrong fix. It is wrong everything from the start. Another thing that was not checked was that vinyl or flooring manufacturer usually will tell you what they recommend their product to be installed over. They will also tell you what they won't allow their flooring material to be installed over. And usually they do not allow you to put over gypsum self-leveling floor. Okay, so it was just a wrong all together. A cheap fix would be to take it, leave it as is, and put another layer of, plywood decking over it. The problem, that sounds like a reasonable fix, but the problem with that is when you add another half inch or 5/8 inch of thickness on your flooring, it would affect the thickness. It may require for you to cut down all of your existing door. Okay, trim the bottom of the door to clear that. Now, new height, floor height. Your threshold, everything throughout your space may be affected by that change. So the proper way to do it is to strip it down to the bare, to the bare wood, and do it right. I think the crux of it is that get the right people with the right knowledge, with the right experience to help you, because saving a few dollars and hiring people who don't know what they're doing would cost you more at the end. Okay, that's the lesson learned or the takeaway. Jim?
Yeah, without a doubt. Well, that product, the self-leveling gypsum product, is or was used widely back in the 80s, 70s and 80s, and in that exact application. An old building that has very unlevel floors, they would come in and literally flood the floor with this product. Because it's so wet, it is self-leveling. You'll get a perfectly dead level floor, but after a while, the gypsum product breaks down. And it's not what the floor manufacturers call as structurally sound. It's fine for putting carpet on. And a lot of times when you place a carpet on top of it, that was the biggest application. But now when you get into the other materials like floor tile, vinyl tile, vinyl sheet good, that kind of stuff, it was never designed for that. No, and when they started putting that stuff on, that's when they started getting horrific failures. And that's exactly why the product isn't used very much at all anymore, because of that. The moisture level was humongous, because it was like 90% water. The product was like 90% water and 10% gypsum solids, and then the water had to basically evaporate, and they were left with this gypsum solid material that was hopefully hard enough to be able to put carpet on.
I think a lot of the material, even if it's engineer, and to do the job, the downside of it is it's applied by, human skill. So if it's required to be a certain thickness to give, for a minimum performance, there is, if the applicator can simply flood the floor and go, that's good enough. Well, it may be good enough visually, but once you start to use it and put furniture on and stuff like that, you realize that if the manufacturer required that minimum thickness of that material dry to be, let's say, half an inch, and it's wet and it's only a quarter of an inch, as it dries, shrink. So you only have just a small amount of material to support the weight of whatever you put on it. It could be simply be a sofa, okay? But that is too much weight for that quarter of an inch material to bear on. It'll break. It'll break apart, and then suddenly you have a huge problem, and you don't know how bad until things start to sound like, rice paper when you walk across it, okay? So, having the right product, the contractor, these foreign contractor, should be well versed enough about the product, whatever that product is, and check out with the manufacturer, a written specification and installation recommendation, so that they can tell you the flooring manufacturer don't recommend their product on this floor, and then you can do something else. But if they don't do their homework, they're going to bless you with a lot of problems. Jim?
Yeah. Well, the lesson is, obviously, that this is very germane to, you know, if you have an existing house, if you have an old house, these are the things you've got to look out for. You've got to look out for what was done before, what you have to do, and make sure that you do what needs to be done properly to be able to create a structurally sound floor, which is every flooring manufacturer now uses that term, structurally sound floor, as a substrate for your flooring material, whatever it's going to be. So, you know, just a word to the wise that that happens a lot, and you will run into it when you're into old buildings, especially old houses. So something really to think about.
Jim?
No, go ahead.
A couple of weeks ago, I think we came across something else that was dealing with flooring, and it was also a, the intent is to get a new flooring. The problem is the insulation of the new flooring was, against the manufacturer's approved substrate. In this case, it was a floating floor, brand new, installed over an existing carpet. I don't know how much you save, okay? But applying, when you put material over something that give, every time you walk across that floor, it's going to be like a sponge. And it will actually destroy the new floor system a lot faster than it was designed to. And then you go back to having to rip out everything down to, the proper substrate or that structurally sound substrate to put on the new flooring that you have to purchase. So do everything according to the book and do it right. So that way it just reduces the amount of headache that you will have. There you go, Jim. George.
Yeah. Even an application, I know we're kind of on the subject of old buildings or retrofitting, but, you know, it's germane to a lot of places. When you are replacing your flooring, and let's say you have carpet, and you say, now, we're yanking out the carpet because we can't keep it clean, we can't disinfect it properly, we can't have a sterile environment, so we're going to put in what Jim and Han recommended. You know, we're going with the hospital-grade flooring system. That's fine. But you have to make sure that the substrate, what you're putting the flooring system on, meets the manufacturer's recommendation, is smooth and structurally sound. And when I mean smooth, we mean smooth. It you can't just slap it down on old OSB board, if you have OSB down, or old concrete floor that maybe has a whole bunch of sticky residue left on it from the carpet that was glued down. And all those little ridges and all those little bumps and all that crap that's on those floors will telegraph through any floor system, except for ceramic tile. Because ceramic tile, you're placing a mortar level down and you're setting tile on top of it, so that makes up for it. But if you're putting anything else in the way of vinyl floor or, like, say, luxury planks or anything like that, it will telegraph through. When I mean telegraph through, you will see over time those little bumps and those little ridges and those little imperfections will show on that floor. So you have to prepare that floor properly. You either have to sand it, if it's a concrete floor, to get rid of all that residue or those little bumps, or if it's an OSB floor, you have to more than likely put down a underlayment, which is a thin, very smooth plywood-like material that gets nailed down over top of, and all the joints are properly sealed, and so that you have a really smooth floor system to lay down your new flooring with. So that's very important. If you don't do it right, it will add to actually premature failure. We had an application where the underlayment was not placed on an OSB floor material. A vinyl plank tile was placed, and over a very short period of time, the wheels on the doctor's chair or the technician's chair, both, rolling across it, wore through the tile and caused it to prematurely fail because the substrate was too rough. And so, you know, another option going wrong. Obviously it should have had the proper underlayment placed underneath of it, and then the tile plank material placed on that. You would have had a much better chance of that product surviving as opposed to prematurely wearing off. So, wanted everybody at least to be able to hear these things. And if you're in that particular situation, it's, you know, something to keep in mind. And like Hans said, I think you said it the best. Get the professionals who know what they're talking about involved and look at these things before you move forward in doing something.
There is a magic word.
What other questions
do
we have?
Yeah, there is a magic word that's involved in flooring. It's called prepping. If your floor substrate is not prepped properly, you're going to have problems. Okay, so anyway, ironically, a lot of these questions and discussions have been around old buildings, old houses, or houses have been converted. Old office had been sitting around for a while, and some of the doctors considered buying it and so on. So their question, stemmed from working with old places. Okay. This one it happened to be an older building. It's a two-story, and let's see, what is some of the challenges? His question is, what is some of the challenges that you can encounter or can expect working with a two-story residential structure converted into a dental office? Jim, you want to take a crack at a couple of the things?
Well, first of all, obviously, there's just literally a massive list of things that you're going to have to check when you're looking at is the building structurally sound and designed to meet the commercial codes necessary? Because remember, if it was an old house, it was designed under the residential code. So that's the first thing. You know, is it structurally sound to be able to meet the new commercial code? Because you don't get grandfathered, if you know what that term means, grandfathered in meaning that, okay, if it's a house, it's a house. Okay, and then if you want to turn it into a business, then you have to bring it up to the business commercial code. Dental offices are businesses. Now, if it was already a dental office, and we actually had this particular question raised to us as well. Okay, it was an old house. It was turned into a dental facility of some sort, and I want to take it over. Well, they may or may not have done any retrofitting to be able to get it up to commercial code. So you're going to have to check that. That's the first thing, to see if it's been brought up to commercial code. And that's structural, that's electrical, that's plumbing, that's mechanical, that's all the systems have to be brought up to the proper code. Then you have the whole issue of handicap code, ADA, and what's going to happen there. Unknown, because you have to look at each individual situation and see what's going to happen. Because a lot of times, especially old residential houses, were never ever designed with wide enough stairs or with wide enough corridors. You have to get the right place to be able to really have a good opportunity to turn it into a dental office. Old houses are great. I live in a 100-year-old home, which I'm in the constant state of restoring. It's a great place to live. I would not want my office here. I would not want a dental office here because you couldn't turn it into one. So, yeah, I mean, you have to have the right place. Now, we've done many of them. We've looked at many of them. We've helped lots of folks all over the country look at everything from old, century-old colonial homes to you name it. But it can be done, but you have to, again, have the right people to look at it to be able to check all those systems. The big one that has absolutely nothing to do with the house is going to be the parking. You know, is there enough parking able to be placed on your lot to be able to make this thing functional? We've talked about that before. How many parking spaces do you need? Now, with the COVID-19 situation and, you know, not having as many people coming to sit in your lobby as before, but I don't think that's going to minimize your parking. In reality, it might even actually increase your parking a little bit because your parking now becomes your lobby. A lot of times, you know, the procedures are now everybody sits in their car until you text them to come in for their appointment. So you may have more need for parking than less. And a lot of times there's not enough parking. Those are the big ones, Hans.
You know,
there's a lot of others.
Yeah.
Everything from
flooring
structures and you name it. But that's the biggest ones. If you can't satisfy those things, you better walk away from that one and go find another one.
You know, the assumption is, you know, I heard all the time, those who contribute to those questions often say, I converted a house into a dental office and I didn't have any problem. The detail that they did not give the individual asking the question is, I converted a house back in 1805. Okay, when there is no building code, there is no ADA accessibility requirement. It matters. Those details matters. Okay, the biggest challenge right now, when you look at a two-story structure to convert into a dental office, whether it's a commercial building previously or a house, is that in some states. And we learned this, particularly in Illinois. If there is any health care services provided in the building, it happened to be a two-story building, an elevator is required. Okay? Now, the definition of health care, it could be anything from a psychologist's office, a chiropractor's office. So as long as it's a two-story building that provide health care of any kind, you have to have an elevator. So if you it could easily add $60,000 to $100,000 on your project. Okay, it could easily take up, you know, 20, 30 or more square feet of space, of your floor space, and it could modify and change your flooring structure system drastically. So it also play a big factor in whether the building is going to work for you or not. Mainly, if you are entertaining or considering looking at that kind of structure for your office, okay, even you get it cheap, you have to know what is the potential cost that you have to put out to bring the building up to the today's standards. You know, like Jim say, electrical system, mechanical system, plumbing system, structural system possibly, and the elevator, the site, all that stuff adds up pretty quickly. So even if it's cheap, would it cost you more, you know, in the long run compared to, let's say, build a brand new building on a different site where you have the freedom to do everything right, everything the way you want it without compromise. Okay. So the big major thing that we usually recommend you look at involving your building system, and Jim brought out a very good point. The site, it have to have that property have to have sufficient land for you to develop a parking area and still have the proper drainage requirement to retain the water on your property. Access, turnaround, what have you. So the bottom line, a lot of recommendations that I've heard is call a contractor to help you. That is true to some point. The contractor can help you with pricing once the architect tells you or recommend what needs to be done.
Yeah, pricing of what? That's exactly right. What are they pricing? Who's giving the recommendation to what has to be done? That's the big thing. You've got to have the right recommendation because, Han, you were saying parking is an important part in it, and I definitely agree. But, there's one other thing that's even more important than any of this, and it has to do with the zoning. If that's an old house or an existing home, it doesn't even have to be an old home. It could be a new home. I don't care. If it's zoned residential and you want to put a business into it, you have to go to the zoning department of that city and get a zoning change. You may or may not be given that zoning change. It depends. And there's a lot of criteria that you have to look at. You have to figure out whether the building can actually even be changed, the use group and zoning, so that you can create a business in it. You may run into a situation, we've seen it before, where a residential structure is only going to be allowed to be residential. They won't let it become a business. That's the zoning code within that area, and you're stuck. You can't move forward. So it's useless to you. So you definitely wouldn't want to buy it until you got at least the understanding from the zoning department that you could rezone that use to a business. That's a deal killer. If you can't get that, you're done. Move on.
Jim just shared the key factor in your decision making. Okay, is get all this stuff checked out. It's too late after you bought it. Okay, after you bought it even for cheap, it becomes just nothing more than residential rental property for you. Okay, because if you can't change the zoning you're stuck with a house. So check it out. Do all your homework and all that stuff before you actually sign a dotted line to buy it. It's important because it'll be shocking. It'll be very disappointing to know that you can't do what you need to do because the codes require the requirement do not allow you to. Right, Jim? Jim?
I mean, obviously, if you've got a situation like that and you want to talk with people who know how to deal with it, give Han and I a call. That's our advertisement for today, because we've done it. We've done a lot of it before in a lot of other applications, as well as a lot of applications in dentistry. So, like always, Han, we've blown through an hour. Hopefully, it's been informative. You know, check out some of that new stuff, technology that's out there. It might be perfect for your application. We're glad to be able to share it with you. We're glad to give you this information. And, you know, again, thank you for listening. Thank you for being part of the show. And if you have any questions, please get a hold of us, call us, and you can throw them at us, and we'll try to answer them one way or another. With that, Han, I'll let you have the last word.
Right. I mean, you can actually go onto our website, and if you want to talk to us on a one-on-one basis or have a conference with any or all of us, you know, schedule a time. All right. But anyway, appreciate you plugging in, spend your last hour with us. Hope hope we share some information that could be useful to you. Until then, have a good evening.
You've been listening to HJT Design Radio Straight Talk with Jim and Han. To contact us and find out more info about upcoming shows, please log on to our website at www.hjtdesign.com. Until next time.